Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program number 712, Interview with Russ Baker. This program is being recorded on May 30th of the year 2010. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Russ Baker, the author of Family Secrets, subtitled The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years. Russ Baker, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you very much.
In this remarkable book, you have, as I said before, taken what most people like to do, what most critics like to demean as conspiracy theory, unquote, and really illustrated what would be much more credibly and recognizably characterized as networking. And we're going to talk about networking with sort of the ultimate event that gets labeled as, quote, conspiracy theory, unquote, and that is the assassination of President Kennedy. Why don't we start with an article that appeared in The Nation magazine, in which, by the way, figured in a miscellaneous archive show when George Bush was running for president back in 1988. Article from The Nation magazine referring to a George Bush of the CIA and doings vis-a-vis the Cuban exile community.
Basically, what happened was, and by the way, the background is that in doing 5 years of research for Family of Secrets, I happened upon the odd fact that George H.W. Bush could not remember where he was on November 22, 1963, the day that Kennedy was assassinated. And, of course, no journalist worth his salt could possibly write a book about the family without at least exploring a fascinating question like that. And so I began trying to understand why he couldn't remember or why he wouldn't write about that event. And one of the things I ran across was the document to which you're referring. Basically, back in 1988, when George H.W. Bush was about to receive the Republican nomination for President of the United States, The Nation published an article by a gentleman named Joseph McBride, who had come across this declassified memo. It was an FBI memo, and basically this memo said that on November 23, the day after the assassination, the FBI had provided a briefing to representatives of two other intelligence agencies, naming the agencies and the individuals, one of them being Mr. George Bush of the CIA. Now this was very, very interesting because, of course, Mr. Bush had been director of the CIA in 1976, but had made a point of the fact that he had no prior background or experience in intelligence prior to being named the director. That made little sense, and as I pointed out on another program, in fact, I discovered that there was a back history of involvement with the CIA by Bush Sr. Going back decades. And so that was the background when I looked at this particular document. And basically, what it suggested was that he was somehow involved with Cuban exiles, who, of course, are a part of the important equation surrounding the death of Kennedy. And when Bush was pressed to explain whether that was him or not, at first he denied it. The CIA declined to comment. They said, we don't talk about personnel. They then broke their rule, and they then claimed that this was another George Bush. And as I detail in Family of Secrets, the other George Bush, very curiously, was hired by the CIA. He didn't have any kind of background in intelligence. He was hired at a low level, basically an entry-level position on a temporary basis, shortly before the assassination, was kept on there for several months, and then was let go. And that was very interesting to me, that the only time that we know of that there might have been two George Bushes in the CIA were right at that moment. And, of course, that was very convenient when Bush was about to become President of the United States. The CIA broke their rules and announced that it was another George Bush. That in itself, by the way, people from the agency told me that was so strange that meant that they were under tremendous pressure to make that claim. And so the significance there is that the other man then said it was not him, that he was merely a trainee, that he wasn't given any kind of briefings, and would not have been privy to this information. So we believe that the preponderance of evidence is that this was, in fact, George H.W. Bush, who was being named in this memo related to Cuban exiles and to the aftermath of the Kennedy assassination.
In our last interview, Russ Baker, you talked about one of the many things that you develop in Family of Secrets, which is the curious nature of poppy bushes. We should distinguish the two Georges. The poppy bushes, Zapata Offshore Petroleum, how it didn't make a lot of sense as a petroleum or business venture, but it made a heck of a lot of sense as an intelligence front, or what is known in intelligence circles as commercial cover. Develop that for us, and how does that relate to Cuba?
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, you have to, when you look at Cuba, it's important to discover that many of these wealthy families had huge investments there. The Bushes and the Walkers, that's the maternal side of the family, both had extensive investments in plantations in Cuba. And so they all had a stake in Castro not nationalizing their properties. They had a stake in getting rid of Castro after he did so. And so that's the background. And then you have Zapata Offshore, as I say, a company whose numbers made no sense. It didn't look to be a company. It was getting tremendous amounts of money coming in from very well-connected figures in Washington, including the publisher of the Washington Post, for this little tiny company based in Texas. It didn't even have particularly good prospects. H.W. or Poppy Bush was traveling all over the world, a business that seemed to have nothing to do with the size of the business itself or of its activities with offshore. And one of the things I focus on in Family of Secrets is how Zapata put this rig on an island owned by Howard Hughes, who had extensive connections, as many wealthy people did, with the intelligence apparatus, that he provided this location. They put a rig there. They employed Cuban exiles to work on the rig. And then the rig was commissioned, supposedly, by a couple of major oil companies, one of which, Gulf, had on its board Kermit Roosevelt. Kermit Roosevelt, having just left the CIA, where he had been in charge of the coup in Iran against the democratically elected leader, Mohammad Mossadegh, whose principal crime had been, again, involved with nationalization of resources. And so that's the background there. There's the rig. It's right off of Cuba prior to the Bay of Pigs invasion. That was clearly some sort of an operational location. And actually, in Family of Secrets, I cite correspondence between Neil Mallon, who was Poppy Bush's sort of godfather, you might say, favorite uncle, Neil Mallon and Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA, talking about our quote-unquote Caribbean project and how they were working together. Other correspondence where Mallon talks about how their company was being used to help recruit officers for the CIA. So you don't have to do a lot of connecting dots to see that the overwhelming indication is that this whole thing was a CIA operation, that Poppy Bush was deeply involved in it, that he was deeply involved and interested in the project to remove Fidel Castro. And then that, again, that's the background as we now move forward, and we're in 1963, and John F. Kennedy was involved with secret back-channel negotiations with Fidel Castro. He had fallen afoul of the CIA, of the Pentagon, of the oil companies, really of all of these power centers. And that was a very, very tricky act. And so it is with that background that we see Poppy Bush seemingly operational on something involving the Kennedy assassination and involving these intelligence agencies.
You made an allusion to Henry Neil Mallon. We talked about him in our first installment, our first interview, number 711. And in Family of Secrets, as we've already touched on, you discuss Dresser Industries, his role with Dresser Industries, and how that was one of the entry points for Poppy Bush into the petroleum business. Dallas, Texas, of course, and we're going to be, in a sense, navigating from Wall Street down to Elm Street, the street on which President Kennedy was killed. Dallas, of course, is inextricably linked with the oil business. Tell us about Henry Neil Mallon and the World Affairs Council of Dallas.
Right. Mallon was a member of this circle around the Bushes, who'd been in the secret society Skull and Bones at Yale, and who very much cooperated together in these clandestine operations after they got out of school. And so he was hired by the Bush family's investment bank, Brown Brothers Harriman, to run a company called Dresser Industries, which provided various services in the petroleum industry. And so he ran Dresser. Dresser, as I pointed out, cooperated with the CIA in, at minimum, helping recruit people to work for the agency abroad. It gave Poppy Bush one of his early jobs before he started his own oil company. Seemed to be very clearly an intelligence-connected firm, as many of these firms in the oil industry were, because you have to understand that they had a like mind and they had purposes in common. Mallon was particularly an enthusiast of this and was sort of an understudy of Poppy Bush's father, Prescott Bush. And so that's really what was going on there. He then moved to Dallas. That's really the original Dallas connection, and in Family of Secrets, because this is so complex, listeners can go and read the full blow-by-blow account of all this. But basically, Mallon moved to Dallas. Dallas was becoming the center of the oil industry, center of oil finance, and a key hub of the growing military-industrial complex. There were a tremendous number of defense contractors locating there. And so this was very, very important to this circle around the Bushes, banking interests, and the aborning modern intelligence state. And so Mallon set up there, moved Dresser Industries to Dallas, and this became a hub, and it becomes a hub of all of these relationships that we then see directly to figures connected to the shooting of Kennedy on November 22.
Throughout Family of Secrets, Russ Baker, you detail the inextricable relationship between the petroleum industry and the intelligence community, and you present a remarkable portrait of someone who, in many ways, I think, could be considered an historical microcosm of the 20th century and perhaps even a certain part of the 21st century, though he didn't live nearly long enough to see the 21st century, and that is George de Morenschild, nay, George von Morenschild. And given that we could probably spend a whole hour on de Morenschild alone, I wonder if you would detail his background, starting with Tsarist Russia, the Nobel oil fields, and this world of Cold War activities, espionage, petroleum, and after sort of an introduction, and the de Morenschild family as a whole, talking about some of the deep networking. I was fascinated to see de Morenschild. I knew that he knew the Bouviers, but I didn't realize that before World War II, he was networking with the Bouviers, the family of Jackie Kennedy, and with the Bushmilia. George de Morenschild, nay, George von Morenschild.
Right. Well, the background there, again, in the context to Family of Secrets, which is a book principally about the Bush family, the context is that that Lee Harvey Oswald, in the year prior to the assassination, that there was a one individual who was particularly influential in his life, in and out of his apartments constantly, driving him to appointments with dentists, arranging babysitting, lodging when they needed a new lodging, and so forth. And this was very interesting. This is not well known. This is not. It's referenced briefly in some books, but there's been a wholesale failure to scrutinize this man who essentially was an influencer over Oswald. Because if Oswald was involved in the shooting of Kennedy, or even if he was not, just the mere fact that he is the central figure of interest there, you need to look at the people who seem to be orchestrating him, and the principal orchestrator was this George de Morenschild. And so I began, the reason I looked at George de Morenschild was because I, at some point, it became clear to me that George de Morenschild not only knew Lee Harvey Oswald very well, but he also knew George H.W. Bush. And in Family of Secrets, I provide actual documentation, correspondence between them, and so forth. And I explain the backstory. And basically, again, this takes a whole chapter in the book, so I can only just sketch the barest outline. But George de Morenschild was a Russian emigre from a privileged family in the nobility. And they had been involved with the oil industry in Azerbaijan, in Baku, which was at the time the greatest single source of petroleum in the world. in all of these great families, including the Rockefellers, were all trying to get in there to get their piece of the action. And so De Morenschel was supremely well-connected. When he came to the United States, he was quickly plugged into certain families, including, as you pointed out, the Bouviers, Jackie Kennedy's family, and they would actually spend time with them on Long Island, out near what is now the Hamptons. But interestingly enough, George de Morenschel also had a direct connection to George H.W. Bush. So what I'm saying is Lee Harvey Oswald's, so essentially his handler, if you will, was close with Bush 41, President George H.W. Bush. And that relationship went back to prep school, where when George H.W. or Poppy Bush was a young man, he lived in a little house with another fellow, and that fellow's basically mother was married into George de Morenschild's family, and George de Morenschild for a time lived in their apartment, I believe it was on Park Avenue. And so you have this fascinating connection, and many, many years later, there's a letter from George de Morenschild to Mr. Bush when he's CIA director, asking him for help because he's afraid for his life. We can talk about that later. But the interesting thing about the letter is that they talk about how they know each other, and they make clear that, in fact, this relationship did exist. And that's very significant. What's also interesting is that Bush, in a memo in the CIA files, says, I knew de Morenschild years ago. He had some sort of connection with Oswald. I can't remember what it was.
And this, of course, from an individual who became director of the CIA, who was certainly in Dallas, certainly the night before, maybe even on November 22nd, 1963. But like Richard Nixon, who also was in Dallas on 11-22-63, we seem to have trouble remembering just where he was. Of course, for younger listeners, we should probably fill this in, Russ Baker. For younger listeners who hopefully will read Family of Secrets and learn some of the past that has determined their future, for younger listeners, it is generally said that people who were of the age of consciousness all remember where they were and what they were doing on November 22nd, 1963. That does not apparently include George H.W. Bush or Richard Milhouse Nixon, who both became president of the United States in subsequent years. George de Morenschild, I believe it was his brother or his cousin Dimitri. They were deeply involved, not just with the oil industry and not just networking with the Bouviers and Bushes before World War II, but deeply involved with intelligence matters and anti-communist matters right from the immediate aftermath of World War I. Develop that for us, if you would, Russ Baker.
Well, I mean, this family, you have to understand that this was very common, that wealthy families throughout the world, and even to this day, if you go to Latin America or what have you, they're very close with the intelligence apparatus because they have the most at stake. They need information. Information is power. That's the way it works on Wall Street, too. If you have the inside information, if you know where the resources are, you can get them. You can get there before somebody else. If you have the information on the people who own the land, you have something over them. You have a way of coercing them. This was a key part of getting wealth and maintaining wealth, was information. And so intelligence agencies provided information, but moreover, when they began, for example, the CIA began with the covert operations aspect, which was actually proactively going in and backing orchestrating coups against the leaders that were threatening American interests. When I say American interests, I'm talking mostly about private corporate interests. In that sense, the de Morenschilds were very, very typical. Dimitri, his brother, was involved with the CIA, again, in Family of Secrets. I have some of the correspondence there. He was involved. The CIA was creating these teams of sort of Russian exiles who would be involved with propaganda behind the Iron Curtain. So that's the background to this family. Of course, we could go on, and it could continue to sprawl in all directions. But the key point here, I think, for anyone listening and interested, is that what I'm doing in Family of Secrets is I am explaining the back history of what is going on right now in America and in the world and what will be going on in the future. And it is a narrative that is entirely missing from the conventional media. And so when you hear about this oil blowout in the Gulf, the worst environmental catastrophe ever of that kind, there's no context, there's no understanding that Halliburton, one of the companies involved with the operation there, was merged with Dresser Industries, the same company that the Bushes were involved with, that a lot of these companies were in a particular building in Dallas where it seems like almost every entity in that building, as I describe in Family of Secrets, had CIA connections. George de Morenschild had his own little company with an office there. Lee Harvey Oswald was brought to that building to try to secure a job for him. And so things like this, these obscure, kind of complicated things that went on 40, 60, 80 years ago, this is the preamble, if you will, to what is going on today. It's a continuation, and it's a whole alternative history that we are not being taught.
George de Morenschild also briefly worked for, or maybe not so briefly, he also worked for Pantopec Oil, the oil company of another former CIA officer, the late William F. Buckley. And
right.
They were not disinterested vis-a-vis matters Cuban.
Well, you see, this is another interesting thing. A lot of people say, William F. Buckley, great intellectual, the editor of an important conservative magazine. He died not long ago, but people may remember seeing him on shows like Charlie Rose. But they don't know the background of William F. Buckley. They don't know that his father was in the oil business and was involved around the turn of the 20th century down in Mexico trying to get control of the oil down there. And then all of these people being on each other's boards, the Bushes and the Buckleys were very closely connected in making money and in exerting influence, and that's the backstory to these editorials you would read from William F. Buckley praising George H.W. Bush as a candidate for president and so on. There was no contact, no understanding that there were back relationships there between all of these people.
And you also write that Pantopec Oil House had appeared to have made many of the concessions that would have given them access to Cuban oil had Fidel Castro not acceded to power. One of the things that is so remarkable about the apparent shepherding around of Lee Harvey Oswald, the eighth grade educated Marxist Marine who defected to the Soviet Union because of his Marxist sympathies, then came home and then was adopted not only by George de Morenschild, but was being shepherded around in the white Russian community in Dallas-Fort Worth, develop that community for us, people like George Bowie, people like Paul Regorodsky and others, a remarkable group of people for an eighth grade educated ostensible Marxist Marine
right.
to be associated.
I think these are too many names for people to handle. This is just my take on this, so I'm going to speak more generally.
Sure.
You're very knowledgeable on these things, but I'm going to just broaden this a little bit. Basically, there is a backstory I was talking about earlier to Dallas, and even people in Dallas don't know this, and that is that there was apparently a deliberate effort to create Dallas as a kind of a super national security city, and all these people were being funneled there. So defense contracts were being sent there. There were whole vast tracts of land where all of these big defense factories were. The Republican Party of the South was largely had its origins in Dallas at a time where the South was almost entirely Democratic. You had many of these Russian emigres, staunch anti-communists, brought on a kind of an underground railroad out of the Soviet Union and eventually brought to Dallas, where they then were introduced to and intermarried with some of the wealthiest American families there, including, for example, the daughter of the head of the Dallas Federal Reserve. And so what they were doing was they were weaving in these two strains, two elite strains, the Russian old money and the Texas new money, and creating a common cause between them. This is very interesting stuff that I've never seen in any books before. I discovered all of this in the course of the 5 years I spent researching Family of Secrets, and I know from many people I've spoken to that they found this extremely interesting, that there would be this backstory to one of our most important cities and how this was being constructed as a kind of a fortress town, if you will.
And side two, and we're down to just about the last 5 minutes of this side. And side two, I want to talk about some of the apparent operational elements involving, again, the petroleum industry and the intelligence community and people like Jack Alston Crichton. But more of this networking in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the white Russians. Gene LeGon, or if I'm pronouncing that correctly, later Gene de Morenschild, tell us about some of her connections, including to Abraham Zapruder, who filmed the JFK assassination.
Right. I mean, again, my experience on talking about these things is that I quickly overwhelm people if I hit them with too many names. So I'm going to speak more generally and say that what we see in Dallas is that all these people knew each other. And we see that, for example, the man who filmed that famous movie, what you're talking about, the Zapruder film, that shows Kennedy being hit by the bullets, that he knew the woman who would become the wife of Lee Harvey Oswald's handler. That's a very, very close relationship here. That all of these people were members of the same elite anti-communist councils there. They would actually sit and meet and talk about what was happening in the world. These people, almost to a person, were alarmed by John F. Kennedy and by what he was doing. And in Family of Secrets, I have one chapter devoted principally to this whole story of what was John F. Kennedy doing. It turns out, and this surprised me, it was not something I had realized before, was that Kennedy in many ways was much more radical than he is portrayed in the mainstream media and in conventional academia, and that he was really very, very concerned about things like the risk that he would preside over the destruction of large parts of the country in some sort of a nuclear Holocaust, and so he didn't want that to happen. He was very, very involved with back-channel negotiations with the Soviet leadership to the consternation of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and many of these other interests. And so you see all of these people, like this wife of Jean, the wife of de Morenschild, Zapruder, the man who filmed the Kennedy assassination. And by the way, then his film was taken out of public sight for years, controlled by Time Life Publications. Henry Luce, the head of it, a close friend, again, of the Bush family, a member of Skull and Bones. And so when you were talking earlier about how people poo-poo anything like this as conspiracy theory, it's basically kind of ignorance and laziness. And in fact, if you didn't find all of these facts, and that there are so many of them, indisputable facts of any kind of interest at all, you'd have to be guilty of, you might say, coincidence theory.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be that everything is a coincidence and nothing means anything. Now, when we look at our own lives, we look at patterns. And, you know, when somebody has worried about their child, the child repeatedly doesn't come home on time, tells stories that don't seem to be true, they want to know, they want to get to the bottom of it. Why our country would not, as a society, want to get to the bottom of all of these fascinating, indisputable facts is beyond me. I think it's a kind of a collective sort of terror at the notion that there is a bigger story there, and that our democracy is not and has never been anywhere as robust as we like to convince ourselves that it is.
Centuries ago, Dr. Johnson observed that it can be truly said that treason doth never succeed, for when it doth succeed, none dare call it treason. Russ Baker, tell us about Family of Secrets, subtitled The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years, the website, and where people can obtain it. And we're going to talk more about this networking, not conspiracy theory, but networking in Sadhu. Tell us about your website.
Sure.
And how people can get the book.
Family of Secrets. We have a website, familyofsecrets.com. You can go there and click and order it through the links. You can also go to your local bookstore. Hopefully they have it. If they don't, tell them about it. They can order it. You can get it in the chains. You can get it online, Amazon and so forth. And we also have a nonprofit investigative reporting site called whowhatwhy.com, whowhatwhy.com, where we continue these sorts of deep explorations into our current history.
If it seems like we've been drinking from a fire hose, rest assured that there is so much more just in the subject of Dallas that we have not touched on, and we're going to touch on some of it in Side 2. However, this concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 712, interview with Russ Baker. This has been recorded on May 30th of 2010. For Russ Baker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.